It was a Sophie and I in this very rural clinic with almost no resources, and so we just, yeah, we delivered this baby, and it was really amazing. She was telling me to do things that I never thought possible, that I never thought I would be a part of. And then about 5 minutes or a few minutes after we delivered the baby, it seemed like there was a problem, and so Sophie checked her and said, "You know what? There's another one." And so, sure enough, we got to deliver two babies.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Fabishmack podcast. It's your host Fabishmack, and today I have one of my dream guests, Chris Nicholson. So, if you don't mind, Chris, would you please just introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Chris. It's a lot of pressure to say, okay, I'm a dream guest, but I'm just really thankful to be here. And of course, you're obviously one of my favorite people too. So it's just fun to be here. Yeah, I have a wife. Her name is Sarah, and I have three kids: Edie, who's in school in Alabama; Ruth Michael, who is 9; and Abby Jones, who is 6. Thanks for letting me be with you.
Awesome. Yeah. Welcome, welcome. So, I mean, most of these, funny enough, most of the podcasts, like the first three episodes, a lot of you was mentioned. There was a lot of Chris, and I know you listen to them, and so, like, do you think what I said was true, or did I praise you too much?
I mean, it's always a very humbling experience, right? To kind of be put in light like that. I think, I'm sure if there's anything, a lot of it just comes from the fact that you and I have a long history together. And so how do we, I don't know, there's probably an equal admiration for the things that I think I've been able to do for you in your life. But of course I feel the same for me. Like I admire you a lot for the things and the way you've influenced me and my family too. So, it's definitely a mutual admiration, but it's obviously a humbling experience anytime somebody speaks about you kind of in that light, I guess.
Definitely.
Is that fair?
So now, huh? Yeah, that's fair. So you moved to Kenya in the year 2011. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And so would you please tell me, like, what that looked like? Because for me, I know, like, for you it might be different, but for me, like I've said before, it would be so hard for me to make such a decision. Like, what led you to, like, actually think about even doing that?
Yeah, what's interesting? I would say a lot of that comes from, I would like to say, like, there was this like incredible amount of like wisdom or something I had. It probably came out of really being naive. I didn't know any better. I thought I could go and do good, and so I loved Kenya. I'd been there before, and so when I moved there, it was really about, I think, just this love I had for Kenya, but also just being naive to the fact that I had really much to offer. I definitely learned very quickly that any plans that I had were really, I was kind of taken aback of how different that looks like actually once you move to a place. You can visit a place and there's this like sense of accomplishment and you're like, oh, this is so awesome. But there's a point to where you get somewhere and you realize I'm not going home, and it becomes much, much more difficult. And so reality sets in. But the process in general was really amazing. I think we had connected with Christian Relief Fund to go over to Kenya, and at the same time, Sarah, my wife, had decided she would stop. She had pursued a PhD in the US, and then she would stop doing anything to do with her with science. And then the CDC approached her and said, "We'd love for you to come and work at a lab that we have in Kisumu, Kenya." So it was really cool, simultaneous things happening where I was able to connect with CRF and Sarah was able to connect with the CDC in such a short amount of time. But again, just to stress, like, it's nothing I had to offer. It was just really about being naive. And people often ask me, like, was my calling to Kenya. And I would say really my calling was not anything specific. It was really just a willingness to do it. So I think a lot of times, you know, if we're willing to do something that we don't think that we can do, or if we are willing to do something which other people are not willing to do themselves, I think a lot of times God can use that for good. And so I would like to say, yeah, I had this like really cool epiphany, like, ah, Kenya's where I belong. But I had this really cool piece that I could do it, and so that's just what I did.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, I remember every, you know, detail pretty much of your life here, because I was with you from the beginning. I can almost say, like, the way I've known you is that, like, you know, there's almost like this part of you that it's almost like the daredevil a little bit. Like, you just, you know, I don't know if how you process stuff, but like sometimes an idea comes into your mind and like you just have this ability to just say, you know, I'm gonna do this, and then you almost push it to the end, even if you don't make it, you know, you always just do that. And to people it's crazy. I mean, to people in the States and of course people in Kenya, because people are always so afraid to try something. But like, I mean, for you, over the course of like the 7 or 8 years you're here, like, you did stuff that to me, like, even for me as a Kenyan, I'll be like, wow, you know, that takes a lot of guts. Like, okay, so like we'll talk about them, but what makes you do that? Like, how do you, if somebody, you know, wanted to be like that, like, is it just something you were born with, or something you just, you know, adapted to after some
that's
time?
Man, that's a good question. You know what? I would say, I don't know. I would say definitely that's why I married Sarah, because she's not as much like that, and I need her so much to be able to kind of hold me back. But, I don't know if I would love to say that, like, it's a giftedness. I think it comes back to just sometimes I'm naive to what is ahead of me, but that doesn't scare me. Like, that, I never feel intimidated by that. I think for me, there's a lot of adventure in the unknown, and there's a lot of adventure in knowing that it seems like in life, for the most part, mostly things work out. And so if I can go with the mindset that it's going to be fine, then I feel pretty confident about kind of taking steps to the unknown. And I think that excites me.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny though. I'm not a roller coaster person. I hate roller coasters.
Yeah. Well, I love roller coasters. That's kind of funny because, okay, so like after some time, like it almost seems like most of the time, when somebody makes such a decision and it keeps going well, people are always fine with it. But the moment it doesn't go well, then people are like, I told you so. But like, even with you, like, even if something doesn't go well, there's always that willingness to try something else, which is very admirable. So, I mean, I talked in my second episode, I think, about the time when we went to the States, 7 kids, right? I have never known what went through your mind. I mean, I could ask you, but would you please tell me, like, what that looked like from your side? Because from my side, it was all just happiness, you know? I know from your side, it wasn't that fun at all. So what did that look like?
You know, oh, man, it was definitely fun. I mean, I remember crying a lot. I remember thinking, like, this is kind of a ridiculous thing. Why are we even trying this? But I thought, like, it's possible. I think people had told me so many times, like, it's not possible to take these kids to the U.S. Like, they'll never be accepted. They'll be denied. And so I think that kind of drove me to think, like, it definitely can be done. And so I don't remember necessarily the process feeling terrible. I remember being stressful at some point, but I don't know. I was just throughout the whole thing, like, excited. Like, I just really believe, like, this can happen. And so overall, I think this excited me, and I guess I never really let my mind think, okay, this is not going to happen. It's not worth it. So I think like it's pretty easy to look at situations, and if the end result is not what you want it to be, to think it wasn't worth it. But I think, like, even there's been so many situations, like, even when with you and I, where things have happened and things that we had hoped for, but the end results look differently than we had thought they were going to look like. But at the end of the day, like, a lot of really cool stuff happened out of that. And, like, we're able to learn from that.
Yeah.
And so I think with that mindset, you don't necessarily live in regret, you know? It's pretty easy to live with expectations, but expectations tend to disappoint you. But if you just live in expectancy, a lot of cool stuff can happen.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So you came here, two people, you pretty much left with a family and a lot of friends here, right? And so, like, you're here for 8 years, and then the first chapter was in Kisumu. You worked with kids in school in an off, like, you know, I was part of one of those kids. And then you decided to move across the country to another side, right? And so that was, like, you know, you came to Kisumu, and Kisumu is kind of like an urban Christian city. Like, you know, there's a lot of, the major population is Christian. And so that's kind of easy for somebody who's new because, you know, you can kind of access a lot of stuff. But then you left that, and then you moved across the, you know, the country to a, like a Muslim town, Malindi. What, like, how did you come to that, like, you know, decision?
I think there's a couple things. One is that living in Kisumu, I would say people have always asked me what my biggest takeaway after living in Kenya. And I would definitely say one of the biggest things I learned was that, you know, American culture says that you should always operate on this macro level of change. And so what is, you know, we like to run reports and ask how many people are in our church, how many people's lives were changed, how many people did you feed, how many, all those things. We were really focused on numbers, this idea of macro change. I think one of the biggest things that really changed in my time in Kenya, especially in my time in Kisumu, was like there's a huge value in the individual and in micro change. One of the first things I did when I got to Kisumu was I felt so inadequate to do anything, but I did think to myself, I can try as hard as possible to learn every kid at Ring Road's name. So you had 400 kids, right? Doesn't seem like a big deal, but I thought if they felt like, okay, at least at the very least, Chris knows my name, then they'll feel like they're individuals versus like just a crowd of Ringwood orphan kids. And so I think from that, it kind of helped me grow into a place where I wasn't so focused on trying to feed as many kids as possible or, you know, do for as many people as possible. I was able to see value in, you know what, like if I can go to Malindi and I can work with one person and do one thing right, I felt really good about that. Even coming back from Kenya, I think, you know, looking at you and looking at, you know, my oldest kid, Edie, I think I would say if I had to spend the last 8 years in Kenya and it was just to know the two of you, I'm okay with that. So, And I think that's the transition that's I had from Kisumu to Malindi. Just realizing, like, change really happens on a very micro level. And so if I could go there and just, you know, work with one kid, I was okay with that. And I realized my setup, the way I had set things up for my work, the work that was happening in Kisumu, I wasn't able to really do that anymore.
And so then you moved to Malindi, and it was pretty successful too. Like, I mean, I was there too, and I mean, it was, I like, to be honest, when we first, you know, like, moved there, and like, you're like, well, when you told me about that, I was like, I think it must be crazy, you know, because I've never, like, you know, there's always that people fear what they don't know, and I didn't know what that looked like. And then we moved with you guys there, and it was completely the opposite. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I'm speaking to you from there right now, so that says a lot. And so the 4 years that you were there, like, I mean, it really changed my mind on what people think and how much people, you know, how much we try to put ourselves in this boundary of religion. But like if you spread outside, you can also see a lot, you know, and just learn about people. And like for you, was that like, was religion ever like a problem for you? Was that ever like a factor of discomfort?
Well, there's a couple things to that. Number one is like, I would have to say that I really fell in love with so many people in Malindi that were part of the Muslim faith. And there was such a unique part of that culture that kind of took us in and accepted us and loved us and cooked for us. And there's a hospitality that's part of the Kenyan culture, but there's also unique hospitality that's just part of the Muslim culture that is really beautiful. And so, I mean, first off, I think like with that, you just find the commonalities, whatever, whether it's religion or anything else, that when you're with people that you don't know or understand, or you don't even speak the same language, like where do we find things that we have in common? And for me, it was just to be able to sit down, and I realized, like, we could smile the same. We could, we could eat the same. We could, there's a lot of things that we could do that were very similar. And so, I would definitely say my approach was not to think about all the things that we didn't have in common. It was to really focus on the things that we did have in common. And there was actually a lot. And so that was really wonderful. Another thing too was, while we did have like a mentorship program, and that's a lot of where we operated, I also did a lot of work in the hospital. And because of that, I was able to form relationships with people that, again, there's a barrier that's crossed where it's not about religious, whatever religion you are. It's really about how do you love well. And so for me, I think working especially with kids who were suffering and kids who were at the end of their life, being able to be present and just love well kind of helped me cross barriers with people of different religions in a way that I probably wouldn't have a chance to otherwise. And so it was like this really beautiful transition that happened where I wasn't, you know, Chris the American or Chris the guy with resources or Chris the Christian. I was just really Chris, the guy that in what was their hardest time in their life, tried to really love them well. And I think I think that became a really cool focus to building those bridges when maybe otherwise I wouldn't be able to have another chance to do that. So I definitely wouldn't say it was a barrier. It was just a unique part of our work there.
Yeah. So everybody has, like, you know, a level of comfort, right? Like some people are very comfortable in situations that others will feel really, really scared, right? Like, I mean, that's why some people like horror movies and some people just cannot stand them, you know? Like, there's a level of comfort. Like, in Kenya has, you know, there's a crazy part to Kenya and Kenyan people. Like, you know, there's that wild part and people are just, you know, so much energy and stuff. Were there any situations, like, you know, that in the Kenyan culture that you encountered that kind of, like, you felt like you crossed that line of comfort?
Yes, I remember feeling that multiple times. I wish I had this really significant example for you to give you. There were definitely times when, like, death, for instance, is handled at such a different level than it is here, both on the Christian side and the Muslim side. So as far as you know, one of my most difficult memories dealing with death was actually, you know, helping you bury your dad. And that was a really hard thing to watch because there were so many dynamics to every piece of it, whether it's people grabbing land or whether it's people mourning differently than I had expected or not mourning the way I thought they should or thought they would, whether it's expectations that are given to families within that process, especially in context of somebody like you that I had a relationship with, to be able to see you and think, this is not how I feel like what's best for his either emotional or you know, mental well-being, I think that put me in a place of just being able to step back and think, am I thinking this way because it's the right way to think, or am I thinking this way just because I'm uncomfortable with it? And so it's really put me in a place of not knowing how to react. But I think I would definitely think in the situations, definitely in regards to when people die, I think were probably the most times I've had where I thought, should I step in here and do something differently, or should this be handled differently, or how could this be done in a way that's healthier, especially for the kids around who tend to lose parents, you know, pretty often, that's just a bigger part of their life. So,
Did you? Oh, you once told me a story where you helped birth two kids somewhere, right? Was that in Malindi?
Yeah, one time, it was really cool in Malindi. This definitely was like one of the most beautiful experiences I've had personally in Kenya. But I was in Malindi and they were doing, there was a time where all the doctors in Kenya went on strike. And so we had some extra funds and through some help from another foundation, somebody had given us money to help do some different clinics in villages where they just needed help because there were no doctors to help them. And so there was a van full of doctors and nurses that were going to meet us at this rural village and provide all this medical care. And then I had a nurse that I worked with at the hospital there in Malindi, and she was going to go with me and help me. And so I rode with her in my car, and the van was going to meet us. Well, on the way there, I had a four-wheel drive that was strong, and so I was able to get through a lot of this mud. And so this other van didn't make it. It got stuck. And so while we were there, this lady walked in to the clinic, and she looks like something serious is happening. And so she was obviously pregnant. And so I told Sophie, the nurse I was working with, I said, I think she's going to have the baby, her baby. And so Sophie was like, let me just check her and see. And Sophie said, sure enough, a baby's coming. And so it was a Sophie and I in this very rural clinic with almost no resources. And so we just, we delivered this baby. And it was really amazing. She was telling me to do things that I never thought possible, that I never thought I would be a part of. And then about 5 minutes or a few minutes after we delivered the baby, it seemed like there was a problem. And so Sophie checked her and said, you know what, there's another one. And so sure enough, we got to deliver two babies. And it was such like a humbling experience to not only go through labor with this lady who I felt like she needs a support system, but actually to catch these babies and then just to hold them in my arms and realize like, oh my goodness, like they'll have no idea, but this weird guy from America was the first one to hold these sweet babies and be a part of their life for these few seconds. I remember just praying over them and just wishing that and hoping that God would take care of them. And then a few hours later, helping somebody else do something in the clinic, and I looked over and here's this mom, this brand new mom with twins, getting on this Piki, which is like this motorcycle in rural Kenya, and driving off and thinking, I'll probably never see her again, but best of luck. You created a great life I would never had, and I'll never forget. So that was kind of crazy.
That's funny. I bet those kids will never forget if they ever, like, you know, they're told that story. That's like a movie. We could just make a movie out of that. That would be fun. So Kenya, like, you know, there's you know, the people always ask. I mean, Kenya and Africa as a whole, like, you've been here. You could answer this question well. So why do you think Kenya is where it is and the rest of the world and America and all the Western countries are where they are? I mean, there's corruption, right? But, like what is your thinking? Because there has to be an explanation to it, right?
Yeah, you know what? If I can answer that question properly, like, I think I would be, like, the smartest person in the world. But you know, I have no idea. I think there's a multiple things. Number one is definitely corruption's part of that. Number two would be we've tried to definitely influence our Western ideals on them, on Kenya, and that probably hasn't worked very well. But I think a lot of it, if in my limited knowledge or, you know, intelligence would say a lot of it does boil down to this idea that we try to do things on these bigger levels when at the end of the day, if we would just focus on just how do we as much as possible help one person and change their life and then move on to the next person versus like how do we do things on a level that we can only have influence at a level of 20% for thousands of people versus 100% for one person. I think if that could be some of our focus, I think things would look and operate differently. I don't know if things would necessarily be different, but I do think as far as true change happening, I think we would have a better chance of those things happening. But as far as like why they are where they are, I think that's an age-old question that it's incredibly difficult to understand, and I don't know if we will. But I do know that you know we can't do a lot. But I love what Mother Teresa said. Somebody said like, how do you choose to help, you know, all these people? And she said, well, when you don't know who to help, you just help the person in front of you. And so I think that it's just a huge lesson for us to be able to look and think, oh man, when you don't know what to do, you have to do something, and you just start with the person that's in front of you. I love that
idea. Yeah, man, that's beautiful. A few last questions. So now you're back in the States, right? Is it ever this, like, will it ever be the same?
Yeah, I'll never be the same. And I think that's okay. You know what? It's one of those things that I look back at my life and I think it's easy to feel like I never belong or I never fit in because I have a different worldview or I have a different perspective on life. But I think the blessing is that I have gotten to, Kenya will always be a part of me. I have three kids that were born there. I had you in my life. it'll always be a part of who I am. And so there's zero way I can regret that. But no, it'll never be the same. I look at culture, I look at people, I look at our need for true change. I look at so many things differently than I could have ever imagined. And I think for me in my life, I think to be able to pretend that that hasn't had a ridiculous amount of impact and influence would be a huge injustice to this huge blessing that I've gotten to be able to live overseas and live in Kenya. So yeah. That's the long answer. The short answer is, yeah, it's definitely different than it. It'll never be the same for me, my wife, or my kids.
Yeah. Anyway, Chris, thank you so much for that. It seemed like time just flew away. One last advice to anybody, you know, that would be considering to move to Kenya, or, you know, who just, you know, wants to know more about it.
Yeah, Kenya specifically, I would say, I don't know. I would say, though, if there's something inside you that says, I think I can make a difference, and I think I have the chance to do that, whether it's in the U.S. or overseas, I would say start somewhere. You know, this is not a credit to anything I was doing, but I would definitely say that when I lived in Atlanta, we wanted to be a part of things that were happening in life that were doing good for people and doing good for, whether it was these small instances of helping somebody that we encounter at Publix, or whether it's doing something on a bigger level. I think the temptation is to think that once you go overseas, or once you make a big leap, that you'll start doing what you think you're going to do over there at that point. But if you're not doing it where you are, you won't do it overseas or anywhere else either. And so I would just say, take your life lessons and take the things that you're, the way that you're able to make a difference where you are, and do it. And then if you're called to do it elsewhere, I would say do it. I mean, if you have the chance and you can travel and you can be a part of being changed as a result of living overseas or living somewhere else, I would definitely do it. I would just caution you to say, if you're not doing it where you are right now, you probably won't do it, even if you make that big leap either. And just say, how can I make an impact? How can I create change? How can I help the people around me? How can I look for these micro events in my life that make a difference, and do them right now?
Yeah. Man, thank you so much. I mean, I'm going to take your advice too. Thank you so much for coming to the podcast. So what's next for you? What's next for Chris?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I don't know. And I'm okay with that. Right now, I'm with Blue Sky Global, and it's I have this amazing opportunity to work with people here in the U.S. and work with people in Kenya, sharing the gospel, and also just figuring out how to do that through adventure. And it's this really beautiful opportunity, so I'm excited about that. But I think as far as what's next, I'm okay with just figuring out today, and then maybe tomorrow we can do another podcast. I'll let you know tomorrow.
yeah. Oh, you're always welcome to do a podcast. But anyway, thank you so much, man. That was fun. I'm always inspired by you, and I hope, you know, from here you keep changing the world, man. I'm always looking forward to hearing you do something else, something great.
You are doing something great, and you definitely changed my life for the better.
Stop it. Thank you. but anyway, yeah, thank you so much, man. I'm glad we got to do this. All right, bye.
You too, buddy. Bye-bye.